Hey there, I'm Caitlin Daly, and you're listening to Listen Up, the podcast series that shows you how to get more out of the music you love. Please note, this episode contains content that may be challenging for some of our listeners. Do you remember this powerful moment at the Grammys? That was Kesha performing her hit song, Praying, alongside popular artists Camila Cabello and Cyndi Lauper. The performance brought attention to the Me Too movement and celebrated Kesha's victory over her producer and rapist, Dr. Luke. The chorus that you heard behind them was the Resistance Revival Chorus, an all-women choir that sings as a tribute to the historical importance of music in protest movements. Inspired by the Women's March, the Resistance Revival Chorus is intended to build local, inclusive communities of women singing together, embracing the power of communal music making as a tool for political resistance. The Resistance Revival Chorus is just one of so many examples of using music as a tool for resistance, either writing it specifically for a cause, or a song that later became repurposed and recognized as a reflection of a cause. There are many examples of resistance in music across the history of the United States, including the American Revolution. Composer William Billings wrote the lyrics and music to the popular tune Chester to galvanize Americans against the British. This song includes lines like, "Let tyrants shake their iron rod, and slavery clank her galling chains. We fear them not, we trust in God, New England's God forever reigns." Take a listen to the hymn being sung in its choral setting. Let tyrants shake their iron rod, and slavery clank her galling chains. We fear them not, we trust in God, New England's God forever reigns. Fast forward to the mid-20th century, when the country was saturated with protest, from the civil rights movement to the Vietnam War. Many songs from this era still resonate with today's listeners, like Strange Fruit, penned by poet Abel Meeropol and made famous by Billie Holiday. It drew attention to lynchings and still makes a deep impact on listeners today.
Blood on the leaves and blood at the roof. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees.
Written as a commentary on inequality, Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind has been considered a protest song since its debut in 1962.
How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Hip-hop is an entire genre of music that was inspired by and influential to the history of resistance music. Early hip-hop provided a platform for Black artists to respond to systemic inequality. A great example of this is Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five's The Message from 1982. Listen to the words, which describe his neighborhood's living conditions.
Broken glass everywhere, people pissing on the stairs, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise, got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back, junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge, I'm trying not to lose my head.
Another hip-hop group that made a name for itself was Public Enemy, in particular their song Fight the Power. In Fight the Power, Chuck D and Flava Flav extensively sample clips and music from African-American culture, including pieces of Afrika Bambaataa's 1982 hit Planet Rock, a Branford Marsalis saxophone solo, and civil rights activist Thomas T.N.T. Todd, among others. Listen to the message conveyed in these few lines.
Rolling. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need. Hey. Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. 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 We got to fight the powers that be.
While hip-hop may have started in the United States, it has now grown worldwide. In Palestine, the group Palestine Street carries on Grandmaster Flash and Public Enemy's groundwork by rapping about life in the Daisha camp, an area with many instances of violence between Israeli forces and Palestinian youth. The group now runs workshops to help channel the community's anger into music rather than physical force.
مش عادي تمشي تعيش في مخيم لاجئين جوا فلسطين مش عادي تمرك عن الحاجة تحس حالك هادي مش عادي كيف الكل بكسم في بلادي مش عادي في طفولة.
In the classical music world, one composer who wrote carefully crafted resistance music was Russian composer Dmitri Shostakovich. In Russia in the 1930s, composers had to be very careful not to anger Joseph Stalin, because some life-threatening consequences could definitely follow. Shostakovich felt Stalin's wrath after the premiere of his opera, Lady Macbeth of the Mtsensk District. The Communist Party hated the modernist music that Shostakovich used to write, as well as the moral makeup of the content. They banned the opera from being performed for almost 30 years. Because he was smacked with such severe censorship, Shostakovich had to take it easy and play nice to the government for the next piece that he wrote, which would be his Fifth Symphony. The government liked this piece much better. It utilized soaring melodies and had a great fanfare at its conclusion, mirroring the glory of the USSR. However, Shostakovich reportedly told a few close confidants in private that what Stalin took as a celebration of himself was actually more of a caricature. Shostakovich was subtly poking at Stalin's character rather than celebrating it. Some musicologists think that the end of the first movement is not a straight-ahead fanfare, but instead that the repetitive high-pitched notes that come along with the fanfare are like being hit over the head again and again. Take a listen. Sometimes resistance music is written deliberately for a cause, but other times, groups of protesters will commandeer songs that were originally written for another purpose as anthems for their movement. One example of this is Nkosi Sikale I Afrika, which translates to Lord Bless Africa. A choir master named Enoch Makai Santonga wrote the words and music in 1899. Take a quick listen to the hymn. You'll notice that the harmony sounds a lot like hymns you'd hear in Western churches. This is because European missions founded choral groups that toured around and performed Western hymns in the 1890s, and the trend caught on in South Africa.
Nkosi Sikelele Afrika, maluphakanyisa uthumbo layo, izwa imithandazo yethu. Nkosi Sikelela thina lusapho lwa.
The words were powerfully unifying, asking the Lord to bless the continent and help her spirit to rise up high. Its popularity grew enough that by 1912, it was sung at meetings of the group that would become the African National Congress, which is the group that was led for much of its history by Nelson Mandela and fought directly against apartheid. Because the song was so popular, it was banned by the South African government. They viewed the song as a subversive threat to the regime. The white English-speaking band Bright Blue sampled the hymn in their 1983 song, Weeping. Weeping was especially geared towards whites who turned a blind eye to injustice. Listen to the second half of the chorus, and you'll hear the background synthesizer followed by a familiar tune.
It was a roar.
After apartheid ended in 1990, Nkosi Sikelel iAfrika became a perfect candidate for the post-apartheid nation. It shared the title of the national anthem with an Afrikaans song for several years, and in 1996, the government decided to integrate aspects from both songs into a sort of composite national anthem. The new anthem had four verses in four different languages: Zulu, Sesotho, Afrikaans, and English. Let's listen to the Afrikaans and English sections. While there is still some discussion over whether this combined version is as unifying as it seems, there's no question that Nkosi Sikelel iAfrika transformed into an anthem of resistance against oppression and is still celebrated for the power that it brings to people who struggle under similar regimes. The song also tells a story about the power of people physically singing together. A 2013 study found communal breathing among choral members led to the synchronization of their heart rates. Imagine that. We all know that a group of singing protesters thinks the same way on a matter, but their actual physical bodies are also synchronized. The power of music can go so much deeper than just melodies. Examples like this continue to today. For example, Kendrick Lamar's "We Gon' Be Alright" has become a unifying chant for the group Black Lives Matter. Here's a group of 2016 protesters chanting just that one line at a downtown LA protest rally. To get a closer look at resistance music, we called activist and musician Stefan Brackett. His band, Flowbots, is probably best known for their 2008 hit, Handlebars.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars, no handlebars. I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars, no handlebars.
Look at me, look at me, hands in the air like it's good to be alive. And I'm a famous rapper even when the paths are all crooked-y. I can show you how to do-si-do, I can show you how to scratch a record, I can take apart the remote control, and I can almost put it back together.
But Brackett, also known by his stage name Br'er Rabbit, has been deep into resistance music for much longer than just that one song. In addition to touring and performing with the band, Brackett appears as a frequent speaker at conferences, trainings, and academic institutions. In 2007, Flowbots founded Youth On Record, an organization that offers musical training and recording facilities as a tool for youth development for at-risk communities. In 2014, Flowbots created the No Enemies Project, a series of public workshops dedicated to recovering the power of collective song as a tactic for social movements. Welcome to Listen Up. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your career?
Absolutely. So my name is Stefan Brackett. My rap name is Br'er Rabbit, and I've been with the band Flowbots for about 11 years. And we have always been using our music and our platform as a way to point attention back towards people's power and hopefully bring up some questions about how they can interrogate this world and make it a better place.
Did you start off writing, you know, just music, or was it always resistance music?
So Johnny Five, who's the other MC, and myself, we have been friends since I was in the fourth grade and he was in the fifth. And when we first got together, it wasn't actually music that we were, that was the art that we were messing with. It was actually comic books. And the kind of comic books that we gravitated towards were ones that dealt with different types of societal injustice. So we really loved X-Men, which was always about like a group of people who are very gifted, but by like a coincidences of birth, were not being accepted. But even so, they'd fight for a society that rejected them. So we were really attracted to those kind of stories. When we were writing our own comic books, we leaned heavy into it. So if you ever like look at the comic books that we came up with when we were kids, the social justice overtones are so heavy-handed, it's ridiculous. So that's like kind of always been the home base for us. So like later on, when we both fell in love with hip hop together, that same kind of aesthetic carried forward into our music. So it's been there from day one.
How do you sort of define, you know, resistance music? What kind of goes into it?
when I am thinking about like the term resistance music, I think about the framing that a mentor of ours used to put forward. His name is Vincent Harding. And he would always kind of agitate us. He would always ask us, like, my brothers, why aren't you doing more? Why are you young activists not using music the way that we use music back in the Southern Freedom Movement? And it took a while, like with his framing, to realize that there's a difference between writing a gold record and writing songs for people in the streets. And we started calling that designation. We called that difference, like, songs that you pay for, like that you like pay for on a CD or streaming, or if you're going to a concert, we call those songs a performance, mm-hmm. because it's just kind of like there's an audience and a performer. There's a virtuosity that is kind of accorded to that person, and you want to watch them. You want to participate in seeing them. But then on the other side, there's songs of power, and we feel like songs of power are kind of put out there in a way where it's put forth to increase the sense of community, togetherness, and emotional resonance and strength of a group of people, of a cause, of a time. So I would say, like, resistance music is specifically songs of power, songs towards empowering a people or a cause, and not necessarily having that same kind of commercial lens, or that exchange of goods and services as a part.
Do you think that we will always have resistance music of some type? Do you think that there's ever going to be a day where it's like, all right, well, now we can just sing, like, happy songs? Or do you think we're always going to have resistance music?
Oh, I hope not. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I think if we ever get to the point in time where we're finding there's no resistance on our lips attached to harmony, that means that Aldous Huxley's, like, Soma prophecy has, like, come fully to fruition, and that we are so out of touch with ourselves and our passions. Like, we should always have something that we are up in arms against, and we're screaming beautifully about, which is what I think, like, resistance music is. It's the outcry of that which is often unexpressed. I heartily believe we'll always have something, unless something terribly goes wrong with the human consciousness. Like, we're talking dystopian to the
we're just all dead inside. We just walk around gray. Yeah.
Yes, totally.
So if you were a young person or somebody who is younger trying to get into this whole kind of resistance music and writing it, what kind of advice would you give to them?
Yes, like, if I were not so old and wizened, I would step from my craggy mountaintop, sweep my beard aside, and hand the stone tablets to these youngins and say, I think for one, I think one of the biggest weapons we have against injustice is actually curiosity. And that kind of curiosity, that kind of child mind, that kind of playfulness, if that can be the light that goes into the darker places of the human problem, I think it makes it easier for you to, like, be able to pull beauty from it. And to make that a bit more concrete, I think that means also, like, looking at becoming a student of what has come before, and like being able to kind of, like, add to our repertoire some of the songs from many, many causes ago, and find, like, be surprised by how relevant most of them are even to this day. And at the same time, being able to take that curiosity into the stories of the people that you're hoping to represent. The beautiful thing about music is that it strikes where the armor isn't. Mm. And it's a piece of technology that communicates emotion. And as armored as we can be against intellectual arguments, particularly in this day and age, is how vulnerable we are also, conversely, to something said beautifully, succinctly, with the right melody and harmony. It will go through like an arrow. And I think becoming a student of that power is also something that will just, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Part of, okay. To rewind a little bit, I think one of the biggest pieces of advice I'd also say is that, like, there's a whole bunch of treasure for young people who are trying to get into music and are going down that the route of power. Because everything right now is directing musicians towards units and sales and impressions. And that trend right now is in many ways hamstringing the creative process. So I'd also say that for any musician who's looking to, like, say, like, I just want to be able to speak truly and deeply to what is happening in the times and hopefully giving people some medicine with this music, you will probably find a fertile and open and wide road and probably a lot of audiences as well. Mm. It's the less trod, but, like, pretty wide road at this point in time. But I think that also means it's probably the most fun.
Mm-hmm.
So if a musician is looking to have a lot of fun and they're curious and they want to be tapped in to something that will keep them going, I think that this time is ripe for musicians with that kind of orientation.
Music of all genres and countries has the power to say things that can't only be said with words. The act of making music and then singing it together can build solidarity that is powerful enough to create real social change. To play us out, here's a sample of Joe Scarborough's song, Stand, written after he was inspired by the 2017 Women's March in Washington.
And how the world turns violently.
Listen Up is hosted by me, Caitlin Daly. Our research assistant is Marissa Moore. Listen Up is produced by the New Haven Symphony Orchestra in partnership with the School of Communication, Media, and the Arts at Sacred Heart University.
We will not go down.